Good morning, folks. Kate Knuth and I are going to draw all the bills today. That means Kate Knuth and I can make all the decisions today, too, can't we? Representative Daphne, would you like to come up? Members usually do come moving in fairly quickly now. What we will be doing with all of these bills, and I think yours too, is to lay it over for possible inclusion. But let's hear from it first, and see what's going on.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Would you like to start?
Certainly. Madam Chair,
we don't have a quorum. I'm not going to move your bill, but I'm pleased to do that in just a few minutes.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'm going to be exceedingly brief because there's people here who actually know what they're talking about, and I think that would be better. But House File 1913 is asking for a small expansion of the uses of funds generated from several sources into the County's Hazardous Waste Fund. This morning I have with me Hennepin County Commissioner Peter McLaughlin, as well as Rosemary Lavin from the Hennepin County staff. They can speak with more authority as to both where the funds are generated from, current uses, and the hope for additional uses.
Super. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Welcome. I'm Peter McLaughlin. I am co-chair of the Hennepin County Intergovernmental Committee. Happy to be here. With these numbers, it's almost like a county board. Madam Chair, this bill would, it's a Hennepin County only change, and it's a change in the Hennepin County statute. The county has been authorized to create a solid and hazardous waste fund. This bill would provide for clear authority to use the money in that fund for environmental monitoring, environmental protection activities, an expansion of the uses from the solid and hazardous waste definition. It would permit a more integrated approach to the environmental activities of Hennepin County. It moves us away from the siloed approach to the activities and the siloed approach to budgeting that we're now engaged in. It likewise would reduce property taxes, because this would allow us to use funds from the hazardous waste, solid and hazardous waste fund to displace property taxes that are now being used for these environmental activities. It's approximately $700,000 in our budget this year. You are likely to hear, Madam Chair and members, from some members of the industry or from producers of solid waste, as we did in the Senate, but this is, in some sense, their money. They're generating it through their tip fees and the like, and it ought to be, the tight restrictions on the use of this money ought to continue. My challenge to that argument would be that some activities that we would be funding, we believe, are directly related in terms of monitoring water quality and the like, which is affected by bad solid waste practices. We need to be paying attention to what's going on and making sure we know if there are problems. Other activities we believe are better performed out without the silos, beyond the silos, which is the proposal here. And third, this notion of the where the money comes from. I would just note that this year, approximately $13 million of the revenue that's in this fund comes from revenue that is generated from the creation of electricity and steam. So $13 million from that. And then $16 million in the fund comes from property-based fees, which are a direct subsidy to the haulers and to the generators of solid waste that we have been having to inject into the system. So upwards of $30 million, Madam Chair, is not money generated from tip fees or hauler collected fees. And so we would like additional flexibility for environmental purposes in the use of these funds, and that's what this bill would do, Madam Chair. We'd be happy to stand for questions. Rosemary Lavin is our staff person in charge of this, and she can handle any of the detailed questions that you might have.
I'm taking questions right now, but what I'm assuming is when people come up and chat who may be opposed to it, there are going to be questions. So why don't we geologist sits fairly close, and
okay, that's fine. We'll be ready to go.
And I think that we'll just have you come not very far away.
Okay, thank you.
There will be questions. Okay. Tony Cuelas from the Chamber. Would you come up, please?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I apologize. Tony Cole from Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Just thank you for allowing me to take the time today to express our concern about House File 1913. We just think that the fees, as they were intended for solid waste purposes, as defined under the Solid Waste and Hazardous Waste Fund, that the expansion of them are of concern to us. And I've exposed those to Representative Dabney. I almost made you a senator. I'm not sure if that's good or bad. We've expressed our concerns to Representative Dabney, and we just wanted to express those also to the committee, that we think that the expansion of the fund is a concern to us.
Now, what Commissioner McLaughlin said, and when you were not in the room, was that money in this fund also comes from electricity generated and from property taxes. So, if his expenditure for the testing does not go beyond that, would you have cause for complaint?
Madam Chair, we just think that the fee that is the solid waste fees as they're moved in to be used for to identify, preserve open space and critical habitat along those lines, we think are a little bit outside of what the fees were intended for. That would be our concern.
Okay. Any questions, Mr. Crouch? I don't see any questions. Commissioner McLaughlin? Okay. We do have a quorum now, and I will move House File 1913 and have it recommended to pass and send. We're just going to lay it over. All right, we're going to lay it over for possible inclusion. But my concern would be hearing from the Chamber representative and then hearing from you that the expansion of your your plans under this not go above and beyond the dollar amount that you just talked about coming from electricity and coming from property taxes. Had you thought of limiting that?
Madam Chair, I think the notion of a cap on these uses based on the amount of money generated from either steam or electricity generation, or it's actually a property-based fee, it's not property taxes per se. That kind of cap would be acceptable to Hennepin County, I think, it would be appropriate. We wouldn't come anywhere near touching the tip fees or the hauler collective fees, and putting that in statute by capping it in that fashion would be acceptable to us.
Perhaps that would relieve some minds if we had an amendment like that. I know you're not prepared with an amendment like that, but if you could help us out and get one drafted, that would be all right, and then we'll just lay this over for possible inclusion, and we'll be bringing it back up to talk about an amendment.
And I will work with staff on an amendment and with the chair on that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Madam Chair and members.
Good morning. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I'd like to move House Bill 1612 to be laid over for possible inclusion in the Parks and Trails Fund recommendation.
Representative Knuth has moved that House File 1615 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Parks and Trails 1612 fund recommendations.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. House Bill 1612 is a bill to use some of the money from the new Parks and Trails Fund to improve access and understanding and interpretation at our state park systems. We have a great physical system, and we have a lot of opportunities for people to get out and get into the woods and learn about ecosystems, ecology, natural history, human history, all of those great things. But a lot of times, individuals and families don't have the knowledge of how to get out there. They're not necessarily knowing what they're looking at. And so what my bill does is use several different strategies to help people better access our parks so they know what they're looking at. They learn the skills of how to do that. It does that in several ways. It creates a Minnesota Naturalist Corps through the DNR. They already have an internship program. This would increase that program. And there's a few things I think that need to be tweaked in that area, looking at some of this kind of standard language, and I'm willing to work on that if members have questions. And I see Len Price from the MCC is here, and we still need to have conversations about maybe how to partner with the MCC as well on the Naturalist Corps. So that's the first part of the bill. It's trying to get young people opportunities to help interpret our natural assets we have in Minnesota, and they'll learn, get a little money doing so, and help Minnesotans better enjoy their parks. Then there's also an appropriation for increasing the number of state park naturalists, and then also improving the self-directed interpretation at our state parks and kiosks, different sort of self-directed tours and information for park visitors to consume and learn on their own. And so with that, developing the recommendations, I have talked with the DNR about costs, and I think we still need to have a few conversations about exactly how to shape this program. But with that description, I'll leave it open for questions. Oh, and one final thing, and Environment Policy Committee, the Minnesota Naturalist Association, as well as the Parks and Trails Council, testified in favor of the bill, but I didn't have them back at this committee.
Representative Anderson has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I heard you say cost, so I wasn't sure if you maybe already covered this, and I apologize for coming late. But can you discuss, I saw the different appropriations that you have in here. Can you tell me how you arrived at those numbers? And
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, I did speak with some folks from the DNR, and these are their recommendations. I'm happy to go into a more those are the recommendations I took. I think in our conversations about, in particular, the Naturalist Corps program, figuring out what exactly those costs are paying for, I'd be willing to do that. But I got these costs in conversation with DNR Parks.
Madam Chair, Representative Knuth, can you tell me, when we are looking at the 30 or so folks that are going to be hired for this, are these going to be mainly summer internships, or is this considered a year-round position? Or,
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, it would be more of a summer internship type program.
And these are college students, right?
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, they need to have a certain amount of college experience. You know, if they're, like many people, graduate, they might be recent graduates, they might be in between years of college.
Okay, well, Madam Chair, Representative Knuth, you know, when I was looking at this bill, and I assumed it would be a kind of a summer internship kind of deal, just looking at the amount you've got, basically it comes down to earning $9,000 for 3 months of work when I crunch the numbers. So I would like a little bit more detail on how the numbers were arrived at. And you don't have to do that right here in front of this committee, but if you could maybe spend some time and shoot that my way, that would be really helpful, just so I have a better picture of how you came to have those numbers. What does it all entail?
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, I think
you know, some of that would obviously be being paid for their work, and as someone who did lots of summer internships and enjoyed the experience, I think as college costs increase, it's important that summer internships are compensated. That's, I mean, we shouldn't expect our college graduates to be working for free, and we shouldn't expect them to do that during the summer. And in terms of the hourly wage plus any insurance costs, transportation costs, costs for having the mentorship with the DNR staff or other staff, I would be happy to help make that clear.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Canoe, I know there's a lot of internships, including here at the legislature, that are unpaid. In fact, it's very rarely nowadays that you find an internship that is paid. So when you consider on top of it that we're paying $9,000 for 3 months of work, that's a pretty darn good gig. But that aside, Representative Canoe, I'm looking also, too, at the other positions that you have, and I crunched the numbers there, and we're talking about positions of earning $80,000 a year, and I'm just wondering how that number was arrived at, and isn't this something that could already be covered by existing staff, and is there an actual need? And maybe this is a better question for Madam Chair. Is this part of your budget target? Is this going to be included in your package, or?
We are laying it over for possible inclusion.
Okay, I didn't hear that, Madam Chair.
Recommendations. So anything that we lay over, we do because we're going to make sure that we are within our targets and we will be within our targets.
Okay, great. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And, Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, we could, and I'll get more information on the numbers from you, but I think it's pretty clear that these numbers are not just salary. There's also benefits and insurance, all sorts of the other costs of having employees as well.
Madam Chair. Representative Anderson, and Representative Cassell.
So, Representative Cassell, are we paying health benefits and retirement and everything for the summer internships?
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, I was speaking to the full-time park naturalist. That was the last comment you had made. In terms of looking at previous budgets and when we go back to the early 2000s, there were significant cuts to park naturalists, and I think that makes our parks less accessible to Minnesotans and makes the programming less useful for Minnesotans. And I did have conversations about if you look at the questions that were asked of the DNR and the information they returned back to us, I went with 8 because it covers the high-use parks that we have in the state and where naturalists would be most used by park goers, and so that's where I came up with that number.
Let me just clarify here, Representative Smith. When I looked at your Minnesota Naturalist Corps, the word intern did not come to mind for me because I see these folks as having some expertise and they are going to be actually working as I read this, and so I think we need to clear that up because they're going to be educating the members of the public. Am I understanding that correctly? That they will
Madam
be working with the public?
Yes, they will be working one-on-one, enhancing public awareness, providing interpretation. You can see all of the tasks that they would be asked to do,
including planning and leading educational programs. I do not see this in an internship in the same way that I normally think of that word. So I think we just need to clear up what they will be doing for Minnesotans. Representative Cassell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just, Representative Anderson makes a good point, and I just want to take a different tack on it. As one who's been fortunate to have a career in science as a chemist and a biologist, I've tried to mentor a lot of young scientists, and one of the problems we've had is we won't pay them, and so they go do something else. So I think it's a good opportunity to get young people out there and give them some experience and pay them for it. Let them know that they can get paid. We don't have enough jobs for the scientists, but we want people to go into math and science, but we won't pay them. So that's a problem. I just want you to That's my experience.
Are there other questions for Representative Knuth? I don't see any questions. We will lay this over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Next is Representative Hansen. Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'd like to move House File 1928 for possible inclusion in the clean water recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Hansen has moved House File 1928 for possible inclusion, for possible consideration in the Clean Water Fund recommendation. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a relatively short bill. Not sure how familiar all committee members are with LIDAR. This is a new technology, or actually older technology, that we have adapted and have applied in certain areas of the state. Most recently in the 7-county southeast flood region, we were able to get some money last year to LIDAR map those counties. And I have with me Les Everett with the University of Minnesota to give. He has 30 slides, but I've told him to condense it so we can be done relatively quickly. So he's going to hit the high points and flip through some of the other text ones. But
yes, so we have a long agenda today, so I would appreciate that we don't go into this evening. And so there are a lot of people on the agenda for other bills, and we're just going to be fair to everybody.
Ultimately, the purpose for this is to provide tools for natural resource managers to get baseline data that we can use for measurements as we go through the 25 years of the Clean Water Fund. If we can have the entire state map like we have in surrounding states, it provides us with on-the-ground data that we can use in making natural resource decisions. So with that, Mr. Everett.
Madam Chair, Committee, my name is Leslie Everett. I'm at the University of Minnesota Water Resources Center. You have in your packet a briefing paper which has quite a bit of the material that I will discuss. I will try and go through some of the graphics which you can't see on the paper very well. Topography determines where water moves, how fast, and how much sediment will carry. That, without knowing what our accurately what our elevations are, it's impossible to know where the water will move and how fast. And that's critical to these clean water projects that we've got coming up. And as Representative Hansen mentioned, most of Minnesota does not have this high-resolution digital topographic or elevation data that we need to predict water movement. So we're proposing that to enable the 25 years of legacy amendment funded clean water projects, probably about a $1.5 billion worth of projects, that we acquire statewide high-resolution digital elevation data within about 3 years. It takes about 3 years to obtain it for the rest of the state. Currently, what we have are, as you can see, paper topographic maps, which are only accurate to about 5-foot vertical accuracy, and they're not digital, so you can't put them into models. We do have some digital elevation data, but it's quite low resolution. It's even less resolution than the paper map. What we're looking at is LIDAR. That's light detection and ranging. Basically, it's a laser scan of the Earth's surface with leaf off and no snow. With that, we get 6-inch vertical accuracy, which is good enough for most applications. The end result is something like this, which is if every pixel up there is an elevation. It gives you quite accurate elevation data that you can put in and treat in a GIS program. Just to compare resolutions, if you look here up in the Red River Basin where we have some of the data now, the top picture there is the resolution with the new LIDAR data, and on the bottom is the resolution with the current data. You can see that with that bottom picture, you wouldn't be able to predict where the water moves. So again, we're looking at 6-inch versus 5 or 15-foot resolution. So the uses that we're looking at for impaired waters, modeling for TMDLs, TMDL implementation, where do we put the practices on the land to clean up the water, and things like urban stormwater modeling and mitigation. Here's an example of the uses. This, you can see a series of fields in the background, This is from Seven Mile Creek in Nicholas County. And using the LIDAR data, they're able to model where the catchments are within that field. You can't see it on the field. The field just looks like an ordinary field, especially with a crop on it. But you see those lines going through the middle of those red circles. Those are the pathways that water would be moving in that field if we had a rainstorm. And the little green dots are where we would project outlets from that field into the stream. And when they go to the field, they actually find that. That's where some gullies were found, where those green dots are. Other uses, wetland delineation and mapping, wetland restoration, construction for storage and infiltration, and drainage planning and mitigation so that you can put drains in so that you can control it. Here's an example from Seven Mile Creek in Nicollet County. Using the LIDAR data, you can map out where the depressional areas are. In other words, where could you put some water storage if you wanted to? In this case, they're mapped by depth. So actually going on the ground out there, this is an example of one of those depressional areas where a county tile was outletted into a wetland in order to use it for storage and water treatment. Here's another example from Blue Earth County. You can see, this is an aerial photo. You can see farm fields, the whole thing is farmed. The town of Amboy up there in the left corner. So you don't pick out the features on the landscape just from the aerial photo here. But if you take that with the LIDAR data that Blue Earth County collected, and you color code it, that green area there in the middle, that's the low area. And then if you do using the LIDAR data to do shaded relief map, you can see clearly there was an old lake there that's now farmed with the county ditch going through it. And if you combine some of those and you hone in on the county ditch, this is now you see what it would be like with the current digital, the old elevation data that we got. That's what it looks like. If you take the new data, the high resolution data, that's the county ditch in the blow up, and you can do a cross section of that just from the digital elevation data and see a cross section of the ditch as it exists. Other uses, stream bank and bluff erosion quantification. If you follow up with another limited area flight, soil erosion prediction and soil mapping, sinkhole mapping. So on a landscape like this, you can predict where the water is going to go. You can calculate slopes in any direction and predict where the erosion is going to be. This is a LIDAR image, shaded relief image from Northeast Iowa. Iowa has LIDAR throughout the state. In the karst topography, we have sinkholes. You can clearly see where the sinkholes are on that landscape. Floodplain mapping, including facilities, flood prediction, and modeling. This data is currently being used in the Red River Basin to deal with the flooding. In fact, I was talking with an engineer up there who was laying the sandbags around Fargo based on his LIDAR map last Thursday. Counties around the state, counties around the metro area have already purchased this data at a high retail price to do land use planning for various reasons that you can see on the screen there. However, they own the data and they license it out even for state use. So this is where we have the LIDAR data now, or are getting it. We have Northwest Minnesota, that's a combination of federal, state, and local funds that's paying for that. Some of the data was collected earlier, some of it's being collected now. In the southeast, as Representative Hansen mentioned, the data has been collected and it's being processed now. We hope it's available, I believe, this summer. Those other counties in red in around the metro area purchase the data themselves at a high retail price. It's not available for general use unless you pay for it, and as I said, including state agencies. So that's where we are now. There's a lot of reasons, and the cost that we're expecting to cover the whole state, including those counties that purchased the data there themselves, would be $8.5 million. But it would take 3 years to complete that, and of course the price depends on the contractor bid. These are done by outside contract organizations. So we want to prepare for the 25 years of Clean Water Project, establish baseline data, pay wholesale price once, which is considerably less expensive than the individual collects that we're doing now, and get past this patchwork of county and water they collect that don't match up, so that you can't do watershed modeling if you don't have the whole watershed. And again, we have the proprietary issue. In your packets, you have a list of organizations that have endorsed this the statewide collect, and it includes like Association of Minnesota Counties, Minnesota River Joint Power Board. It's in the statewide conservation and preservation plan. So that's my contact information. I have with me also Tim Lush, who's head of GIS at DNR, David Claypool, who's the co-chair of the Digital Elevation Committee for the state and the Ramsey County Surveyor, and Lisa Haney, who was the first one to bring LIDAR into the state. She's the Goodhue County Surveyor, and she went out on a limb and got it for her county, and has been using it for 10 years now.
Well, thank you for that. We're going to be watching our time, but I want to know if there are questions from members. I don't see any questions from members. We have many of us heard presentations before of LIDAR and have been supportive, so I appreciate your coming, and we will lay House Bill 1928 over for possible inclusion.
Thank you.
Next is Representative Kahn is here. Representative Kahn, she won. Representative Kahn. Representative Kahn, I'm going to move House File 1939 and have it laid over from possible in consideration in the Parks and Trails Fund recommendations.
People just here from former colleague and present County Commissioner Peter McLaughlin is here to explain the bill and its importance to the system in Minneapolis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Peter McLaughlin, co-chair of the Intergovernmental Committee for Hennepin County and Hennepin County Commissioner. The proposal is for the Clean Water Land Legacy Fund. It's for Midtown Greenway signage and wayfinding kiosks. The Midtown Greenway is a project. It's a 5.5 mile long bicycling and walking trail that goes through the south side of Minneapolis. It is on the National Register of Historic Places, because it's a trench. Much of it is a trench that was built in the late 19th century to avoid the conflict between city streets and heavy railroad usage. And it has been converted into a bicycling and hiking trail that fulfills a dream that goes back to the 19th century of connecting the lakes on the west side of Minneapolis with the Mississippi River. That trail the trail itself is complete, and it includes the Martin Sabo pedestrian and bicycle bridge over Hiawatha Avenue and the Hiawatha LRT line. The ridership, this becomes almost an urban freeway in the summertime, with the ridership of 3,600 cyclists in peak months and averaging over the entire year 1,500 cyclists a day. The proposal is to provide investment in completion of the Greenway Master Plan, which calls for additional signs and kiosks and information along the trail. You're down in a trench through much of this, members, Mr. Madam Chair and members, and you have bridges that go over it, but it's very difficult, as a bicyclist from South Minneapolis, it's actually very difficult to figure out exactly where you are. The destinations nearby, many of them are not visible, and so the plan, the master plan, has always included an investment in signage and in information kiosks. And the signage and information will be about nearby destinations that will help locate you along this trail, but it will also locate you within the Metropolitan Bicycle Trail system. And this trail, from one end of it, you can go southwest on improved trails all the way to Carver County. You can go to the northwest with one short gap that's being worked on right now. You can get all the way to the Coon Rapids Dam in Anoka County. You can go to the northeast to the University of Minnesota and make your way east from there. To the southeast, you can go across into Dakota County on the Mendota Bridge and get into St. Paul. And so this is a major bicycling facility. The request here is for $750,000, $500,000 from the Parks and Trails portion, $250,000 from the Arts and Culture section for improvements in the signage, and we would try to use the design and the plan that we've had in place would call for the use of functional artwork. We would try to incorporate it. There's been a lot of public investment in this corridor. It's been an incredible success, and there's been a lot of private investment. We've had 8 Arbor Day days in each of the last 8 years in which we've done thousands of plantings along this greenway with private sector as well as public sector investment and volunteers working to do it. So, Madam Chair, I'd be happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, what would you define as functional artwork? I'm just trying to figure out what that means and what it would look like.
Well, I think, Madam Chair, I'm not an artist, but we would be working to make sure that the designs of the kiosks and the designs of anything that's providing information, that it would fit in with the historic character and also with the desire to preserve green space. So, I mean, we've had some examples of that along the trail already.
Madam Chairman, if I can add two examples specifically useful to this would be bicycle racks and drinking fountains. There are some examples of super functional artistic bike racks right outside the Weizmann Institute and on the University of Minnesota campus.
As I look at the way you want to do your money, it seems to me that in fairness, we need to pass this on, but without recommendation. We have heard the Parks and Trails part, but you need to take this to Representative Murphy's committee, too. That's my... Would that be suitable with you, Representative Donovan?
Yes, that's fine. That's fine.
Because you really are asking
just
money...
With the cross-cut, this cross-cuts against two of the parts of it, and that's a good reason for that committee.
Okay, so I think we have heard your recommendation for Parks and Trails, and we'll consider it for possible inclusion. But at this point, members, I would like to change my motion and have House File 1939 be passed without recommendation and returned to finance with its next stop with Outdoor and Cultural Committee. Is that understandable to members? Is that okay? Representative Khan?
Yes.
Well, I will renew that motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? Motion is passed. Representative Loeffler?
Good morning.
Good morning. Welcome to the committee. I will move House File 1943. They'd be laid over for possible consideration in the Clean Water Fund recommendation.
Well, thank you very much, Madam Chair and members. House File 1943 would appropriate $1,250,000 to Hennepin County to deal with repairing, restoration, and stream bank stabilization. I have a couple of witnesses here, but I think it's important to note I was surprised to learn that there are more than 160 miles of major streams in Hennepin County that feed into 3 different rivers. And, of course, in an urban area, you end up with a lot of runoff issues and a lot of impairment and a lot of erosion. And we're hopeful that working in partnership with the watershed districts and the other water management area organizations in the county, that this will result in a significant improvement to a lot of waters in our area. And with that, I'll turn to Commissioner Peter McLaughlin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My third and final appearance today.
Welcome again, Commissioner McLaughlin.
This project, Madam Chair, as Representative Loeffler indicated, there are 160 miles of streams within Hennepin County feeding into the Mississippi, the Minnesota, and the Crow Rivers, which provide the boundaries of Hennepin County. There is significant erosion that has occurred as urbanization has increased within Hennepin County, and that has a significant effect on water quality of both the streams and the three receiving rivers. We are working at Hennepin County with the watershed, the watershed district and the water management organizations within the county. They have identified projects. They have plans that they have put in place. They've had to defer some of the improvements that would have desired to make because of budgetary concerns. And these funds would be used to implement the plans that these watershed districts and water management organizations have put in place to repair the streams. And what we're talking about is regrading, just to deal with the erosion in particular, regrading, revegetation, and then riprapping in some places, depending upon what the circumstances are and what the hydrology are. And again, the studies have been done so that the various organizations know what needs to be done in these particular places. We would employ contractors if it's major regrading or placement of riprap. But one of the elements of this proposal would be the employment of youth through either the Minnesota Conservation Corps or the Tree Trust, two well-established organizations that have a history of working with young people, putting young people to work on environmental projects. And we would be, our intention would be to use young people from those two well-established programs to do tree installations and shrubs, and to work on stabilization of the stream bank to the extent possible. So we want to maximize the youth employment opportunities that come from this as well through, again, these two very well-established organizations with which we've worked before. So, Madam Chair, we think this fits into the long-range plans and that have not been fulfilled within along many of these streams, and it provides a short-term employment opportunity as well.
I think we all appreciate the need to do a lot of stream bank restoration across the state. What I am wrestling with, and I imagine other members are wrestling with, is you're asking that this be appropriated to Hennepin County rather than to the watershed district. And just help us out a little bit with that.
Madam Chair, and members, our thought was that we have a close working relationship with the watershed districts and the water management organizations. We thought that we could use this as a way, rather than each of the individual organizations putting together an application, we thought we could do one application. And we thought it might be help facilitate the contracting with the youth employment organizations as well, to have the county be the recipient of this rather than having the individual watershed. That was our thought on this. We wanted to bring it forward. We're very supportive of the efforts that they're making. We've, as you know, along the Minnehaha Creek, Hennepin County actually provided some of the financing for a major improvement along Minnehaha Creek in the Minnehaha Watershed District, essentially in the Clean Water Partnership. We actually provided the money that was used to make the improvements, and then we were repaid. But we provided the cash flow for that project, and so we've taken this role of help assisting the watershed district and the water management organizations in the past.
When you said Clean Water Partnerships, was that a funding through the Pollution Control Agency?
No, Madam Chair, that was a local partnership between the Minnehaha Creek Watershed District, the City of Minneapolis, Hennepin County, in which major improvements were made along Minnehaha Creek, and we provided the capitalization for that at the front end.
I think the Clean Water Partnership name has many parents.
Yes.
So getting that sorted out is difficult. Okay. Members, questions? Representative Clark.
It's a quick question. Commissioner, you mentioned working with the youth groups, and could you just spell that out a little bit more? I mean, I think there are some green job opportunities coming through the system, and has the county been able to get some of those dollars for the youth program?
Council. Madam Chair, Representative Clark, we haven't received any stimulus funds yet, but in the past, we have worked, we have an ongoing contract with the Tree Trust, long-standing contract. I can't tell you, I think it predated my coming on with the County Board. Every year, we use some of our summer youth employment money to fund projects, and what happens is that if you've got a local community, say the city of Minnetonka, they want to do some build a trail, what they do is they provide the money for the materials. We use our summer youth employment money through the Tree Trust to hire the young people. So that's been the model, and we want to apply that model here. We haven't applied it to stimulus money or legacy funds yet, obviously.
Madam Chair, I'm just thinking one of the ways to make it clear that we'd be leveraging some of those stimulus funds with these, and some of them do require leverage, is to work with those youth programs. And I do happen to know that the Tree Trust, I believe, applied for some youth build funding that was due in January. I don't know if they'll get it, but you know, those folks are very good at those young kids get high school credits for working and do that kind of work, and it seems like a really nice marriage. And if that helps you with the leverage for this bill, I would just encourage you to check into it.
Yeah. Madam Chair, I just always think that the more you can layer the wins on a project, the more it has ripple effects. And I think if it's addressing the fact that our young people are having a hard time getting jobs because adults are having a hard time getting jobs, we can improve the environment, and we can assist organizations in ramping up. And quite honestly, one of my concerns has been with the new 3-8 cent investment. It's a wonderful opportunity, but I think it's going to be a challenge for many small organizations to ramp up and build the administrative structures, and if they can partner with organizations that are used to managing contracts and, you know, figuring out how to do the timing on all these large projects, we'll actually have a better experience both for the stretching the dollars, but also for the workers, because lining up projects like this and the workers, you can sometimes run into roadblocks, and so you can shift them from one project to another when you're knitting a number of them together.
If I might, the other cost sharing is we are looking to identify through the water management organizations or the watershed district cost per share contribution that they could make to the cost of these projects, so that the fund would not be bearing the full cost of the project.
Super. I don't see any other questions from members, so we will lay over House File 1943 for possible consideration in the Clean Water Fund recommendation.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Newton. You want to bring up all the folks you have at once, so there is anybody? Okay.
They're all here.
Okay. And I will move House File 1576. I think, again, this is one of the ones that has requests from two different funds. Am I correct about that?
No, Madam Chair, this is requesting money from the Clean Water Fund.
Just the Clean Water Fund?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so there's nothing from the Arts and Cultural?
No, there is nothing.
Okay, so we will, I will move that it be laid over for possible consideration in the Clean Water Fund recommendation.
Good, thank you, Madam Chair and members. With me this morning I have Mr. Bruce Baumier, who is the chairman of the board of the Institute for Environmental Assessment in Brooklyn Park, and also the chairman of the board of the Environmental Resource Council in Anoka. And he, for a long time, was the vice chair and a member of the State Environmental Quality Board. This is a bill that was brought to my attention by former Representative Kathy Tinglestad, who now works as the program manager for Anoka County's Community Health and Environmental Services. And I would like to ask Mr. Baumier to present the bill and walk you through it.
I'll be brief. There's a sort of a three-page summary, I think, in your file. The school district, what essentially is going on here is we're asking for support, $6,800,000 for 10 school districts in Minnesota: Crookston, Duluth, Cambridge, Sandy, St. Francis, Stillwater, and Okanagan, Lakeville, Montevideo, St. Peter, and Austin. And the gist of it is there's two things that happened. One is the districts will begin to model environmental controls in buildings that presumably would reduce, hopefully reduce costs, reduce carbon footprinting, but would essentially be ecologically sound. I can give a few examples of that in a minute, I guess. The second part is to solidify over a period of a couple years a model K through 12 curriculum. There's a bunch of curriculums out there now. A couple are funded by the state. Project WET, I know Hennepin is working with, and different programs. But we want to pilot and measure the solid K through 12 curriculum. We want to then, the concept is we integrate this to the rest of the schools in Minnesota in the last part of the project. We were hoping to fund it for 5 years. We built it so it's severable after 2 years. The concept here is there's a fair amount of sort of chaos and confusion, but a real commitment to try to change how these buildings operate, how people are taught, how they learn about environment. So the district want to pilot this, and then what we learn in terms of cost, in terms of impact, kind of broaden that out. Third part of the program has to do with public health. I'm old enough to remember the 70s when we had the fuel shortage and a whole bunch of engineering controls were dropped in the schools, which saved money but created a serious health problem. They sealed up the buildings, and not only did they begin to smell like the inside of a tennis shoe after a few hours in the morning, but you had higher instances of respiratory infection. We certainly had asthmatic reactions. So when we do it this time, we began to upgrade to become environmental. We want to make sure nobody gets hurt. I'm by training a medical epidemiologist. That's an important part of the project. This is an example. If we change the shower head, we will save a lot of money in terms of potable water and have reduced impact on the ecosystem. We want to make sure we don't set the system where we spread MRSA, which is our bacterial infection. We want to have a health profile, this thing kind of rolls along. I guess that's the last thing to say is the districts involved here feel a commitment to the whole green jobs concept. We've got a lot of students who want to learn how to work in the environment. We want to integrate that. We want to build a foundation for looking at ecosystems. I need to just say I'm somewhat retired, semi-retired, but I founded the IEA, which represents, we work with a lot of the medical centers and schools, and called secondary schools, for environmental control. We really have a hard time hiring people. We have a hard time finding folks who have the right background. And it's important to have a basis, a coherent, responsible basis. And if we do this right, you know, support this, we're going to impact the whole state in terms of how kids look at water. You know, if I were to litter with them at the car window, like you know, we used to do back in the 50s, my grandkids would kill me. We changed a different way of looking at the world. We want to do that with water. Just the last point, I guess, is that there's a lot of programming right now, a lot of lesson plans, a lot of concern, a lot of nervous energy. It's important we not move off in the wrong direction here. We need a hands-on, stable sort of template in terms of how the district can reasonably operate. These districts are different sizes. Anoka's got 60 buildings. Montevideo has 4. In the case of Montevideo, the work to do with the cooperatives, there's actually 60 districts that will be kind of working with Montevideo as we're going to make the changes. So anyway, really hope you support this. We'll make a difference if you give us a shot at trying to make this real.
Members, any questions? This is one of the hard issues where we have to look at the definition of the constitutional money versus general fund money. So this is probably one of the things that the committee will have to consider.
Madam Chair, can I just make one quick comment on that? Because
sure.
I want to talk to folks. It's been an issue. I've been real clear with districts that this isn't going to supplement something they're doing. They understand that, and that will be a covenant how we move. Now, it's not to say that there aren't people in these districts, science teachers, sometimes retired administrators, that may not be employed, either they'll lose their jobs, or you know, they won't be used, but they'll be doing something different. And this does mean a lot to them in terms of infrastructure. It will be important, but they will not replicate or supplement. This is an eco-water program for the most important institutions in the local community. It's about water. We're not going to use it to bulk up school budgets.
There's a somewhat similar program called River Watch. Have you all been in contact with them?
Yeah, I'm on the board of the Freshwater Society, and we actually provide support for them. I'm very familiar with that. There are a number of really good curriculums out there. The issue is to figure out which one's going to blend in and actually, get traction, or which portions of programming, for instance, Riverwatch, will blend into existing curriculum. These districts all have something in motion. Which ones will kind of fit into the existing curriculum structure? There's a project called WEST that DNR has, really innovative and interesting, and they have two, actually, two educational things that we need to look at and see if it fits in.
Yeah, it does seem everybody is aiming for the same outcome that you're aiming for, folks like that,
yeah.
But how to get from here to there is the question.
And then I'm sure the image is you get the school is trying to do the right thing, and they're inundated with good people, the salespeople. Jones Controls has got a package. It may or may not work. I supposedly you can get all the hot water in the school by using solar and a pressurized system they've imported from Germany. It may be a work, but we got to figure it out before we build it. And that's sort of, and they're just inundated with this stuff. We got to get a hazmat, and now we're going to look at water in the schools. And that's what we're trying to do here. The fifth year of last year's project is totally based on spreading this out to all the districts in Minnesota.
Representative Scalzi has a question, and then Representative McNair has.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have a calculator, but I've just been doing math on the paper, which is always dangerous. And I think I come up with about $10 million, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, somewhere in there. So for 10 school districts, that would be about $1 million each.
Well, Madam Chairman, it's six. If it's funded for 5 years, and we understand this thing needs to be severable at 2 years, at 2 years it's $6,800,000 divided among the districts. If it is funded for what we project to be 5 years, it would be $11,890,000.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I was off by a little bit, but we're in the same kind of ballpark here, and I think we have 300, I think it's 340 some school districts. So we're talking about a lot of money in the future. I'm just mulling that over in my mind, and I'm thinking of the school districts that are not included at this time, because of course there's not enough money to do all the school districts. But it just the one thing that just kind of hits me is that it's a good project and I like it, but it's not equitable for all, which is what we guarantee in our Constitution. So I just wanted you to think about that.
It's a great point, and I'll carry that back to the districts. They do get it. This is supposed to be what their job is here, is to build an azimuth for the whole state. And we get it. It's not for individual districts. But so we got to measure everything we do. Everything's got to be measurable. We come back here in 2 years, we have a responsibility to define as clearly as we can the cost savings that were involved or where we made mistakes, where things seem to work. There's about 3,000 schools, a little under 3,000 schools. Some of those that were built after World War II have got an acre footprint. I mean, after the war, they built them flat, with huge parking lots. So if you just capture the runoff and get it into a rain garden as opposed to storm sewering it, you're talking about thousands of acres that you're not going to have chlorine and road salt and pesticides and herbicides into surface water. We get to look at this thing as changing the state, and that's got to be the vision of each of the districts. I promise you we'll try real hard to build a template, and I really believe that if we find something that saves money, that will be adopted quickly by the rest of the districts. But this is our job is to use our head and make the right decisions to pilot it and to see if it really works, and then to spread it out to the rest of the state.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and I believe a number of my concerns are similar to the one you voiced and Representative Scalzi asked about. I think at the very least this is an unbelievable stretch to get the clean water money to this point. I've got the same concerns Representative Scalzi mentioned. I think of my own Hastings High School field biology program and their study of the Vermilion River. I just would tell you, Joe Beatty is already doing all this stuff, and I'm sure Joe would love to have $1 million for our school district to expand on what he's doing, but I can tell you he's doing phenomenal work along these lines already, and if this is $6.8 million, I think we got to go back to what the intent of the amendment was. I'm troubled that it's not competitive grants for all schools. I think it clearly doesn't meet the qualifications of what we should be doing. I got to be honest, I don't understand where the money's going to be spent. The fact that it's going to be a two-year program and drop off the cliff potentially is troubling. I guess, Madam Chair, I've probably said kind of what I want to say, but I'm concerned not only for this bill, but the number of bills that are coming forward. And Representative Hansen, I'm really going to commend the Lessard Council, and unfortunately, I think, Representative Gill, we made a mistake in our conference committee last year when we didn't set up a structure for the other two funds, because I think potentially we've got, Madam Chair, with the clean water and the parks and arts stuff, we have a lot of work to do between now and the end of session to make sure that we get a good product, similar, I believe, to what the direction Lessard's been going. And I don't blame Representative Newton for bringing it forward and the opportunity to grab hold of this, but Representative Scalzi and I were just talking about this is a race, and unfortunately or fortunately, some folks have anticipated the race better, and they were getting in good shape last year and last month, and some of us maybe were sleeping at the punch, but sometimes if you get a head start in a race, the most talented and the best in shape athlete may not win. It may be the one that was smart and got up early and went way ahead, and I think we might have some of that going on, Madam Chair. And so I just hope, and the one thing I didn't know was I meant to ask, I guess mostly I didn't really ask questions, it was more commentary, but Madam Chair, what was the recommendation? Where would this be going?
Pardon?
What is the recommendation for this bill?
It would be laid over for possible consideration.
Okay.
In the clean water.
Thank you. And I don't think I really had a question even in there, unless one of the testifiers wants to answer after that long tirade.
Madam Chair, if I may, I just think that this is a great opportunity for our students and our schools to not only study water, but to really do something about preserving our natural resources. We, in Coon Rapids alone, we have 11 schools with huge surfaces, big parking lots. There's a lot of impervious water that's currently running down the drains, and the school districts are being charged by the city of Coon Rapids for the water runoff. Instead of having water runoff, we have an opportunity to use that water to flush the toilets in the schools, to maintain the athletic fields, but we leave it up to the students through this program to find innovation to use the water effectively and to stop the current practice of just letting it run down the drain.
Madam Chair, I don't, you know, I'm out of my pay grade coming in civics here. I have no light as to how that works. This is about water and people in Minnesota. I know that. And you know, if there is a educator who's got a really good program and has a good style with kids and can make a difference, and if this effort doesn't impact them and help them, then we won't have honored what we're supposed to do, which is build a comprehensive water package for these institutions. And the way we're coming at it is we picked, or well, we found 10 districts that had done something special and wanted to get into the issue of ecosystems and water and school property and school programming. In the case of Duluth, they've actually had the first LEED building, which is, I do a lot of fossils. I think it's the first LEED building, maybe in the country for sure, in this part of the country where they've got, it's the leadership in environment and the energy. So they know a lot about how to handle water and facilities. In the case of the Milkanathan, they've really pushed a lot of educational structures. They've got some great instructors there, too, who have worked with kids and worked with the Rum River. And, there's a lot of stuff going on. The issue here is to sort of bring it together and set up a real clear sort of direction for the rest of the district. And like I said, if this effort doesn't touch your district and this science instructor, then we did something wrong. It's based on the whole state of Minnesota. The model is to pick 10 districts to sort of set the asthma. Don't know what more to say. If you give us a shot, we'll do right and we'll impact the schools in Minnesota. I make one more just example. You know, this business about the surface water is no joke. After the war, they built these buildings in a way where they just absorb a tremendous amount of water. Washes, pesticides, herbicides, salt into the surface water. If we catch that and put it into a rain garden, say, in terms of the finance, we can do that money-wise. This instructor whom you mentioned, he or she would presumably blend that into this curriculum. This thing comes together. And all I can tell you is we'll try to make it work for everybody if we get a shot at putting this together.
We're smiling down here because you mentioned the word rain garden. And there have been discussions just back and forth about the need to keep water on the land, which is what you're talking about, and not let it run off. And rain gardens has been one of the things that's been mentioned as we've been talking, having these conversations about keeping water on the land. So that made people smile. So if you're wondering why this smile's down here, is that fair to say, Representative?
No, you're not laughing at my garden.
Pardon?
I don't like rain gardens.
Pardon?
I don't like rain gardens.
Yes. So that's why we were
you don't like them?
Very much like them.
Oh, well, that's good. Okay, well, okay, I suspect if this happens, we'll be popping up all over the state because I like them too, but I like them to help teach the ecology of water as well as to stop paying for storm sewer charges and for preventing surface water washing salt and chlorine into salt and chlorine being introduced into surface water. And the last comment here, after in the 50s, after the war, we built these schools really badly. They're loaded with asbestos and mercury and formaldehyde. I mean, they had to build them fast. They never thought about the environment. The only window that opens in some of these post-war is the principal's window. They're all sealed shut. They're not good places for kids. And slowly they're getting better and better and better, and we're figuring out that the person really is tied to the environment and health. I can't stand the specifics of this, guys. I'm out of my pay grade, but in terms of controlling the water so it doesn't hurt anybody, it's used in a smart way, we will sit an asthma for that, and it will impact the schools in Minnesota if we get a shot.
There's one more question, and we'll... Representative Fortman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a comment. I know we need to move on to the next bill, but I think that when we invest in things like projects at schools, we get a multiplier effect. So whether it's through the national economic stimulus and we're looking at solar panels on schools and wind turbines at schools, of the multiplier effect of you get the energy savings, but you also teach the next generation sort of the science of renewable energy. I think the same is true if we do a pilot project. And maybe the amount of money and the size of the pilot project is an issue, but I think the idea of doing a pilot project about keeping water on site in a school district is a good one, and if it could be replicated by other districts and save money, I think that there's a multiplier effect that those kids will leave those schools with some sort of understanding that of the issues of runoff and what happens to the water after it leaves the parking lot. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Well, thank you for coming, and we will lay over House File 1576
for possible inclusion in the Clean Water Fund recommendation.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you so much. Representative Keaton. Representative Eaton, I will move House File 1606, be laid over for possible consideration in the Clean Water Fund recommendation, and going to remind myself and our folks sitting up here that we need to hear from you again about the River Watch project next week, if we could.
That would be great. Thank you, Madam Chair.
We'll probably try to do that on Tuesday, so that's all right.
That sounds great, Madam Chair. Okay. Thank
you. Just a little administrative work while we're getting ready to hear you, though.
Okay. Sure. Today we're hearing a bill on the Buffalo River watershed, a pilot project that would be done in the Buffalo River watershed, which would appropriate $250,000 in fiscal year 2010 from the Clean Water Fund to the PCA in order to implement this project that would evaluate conduct or develop PMDL studies based on the watershed, not doing it on a water body by water body basis, but looking at the overall watershed, basically taking a sampling of the watershed in order to develop these studies. It's a more efficient way of doing the PMDL studies, and the Clean Water Council did recommend this. And I do have with me today Mr. Glenn Scuda, who is the watershed section manager for the PCA.
Madam Chair, good morning, members of the committee. Glenn Scuda, watershed section manager of PCA in the regional division here in St. Paul. And after the time to speak about the bill this morning, just like to indicate that though the agency can't support the bill from a budgetary standpoint because it's not part of the governor's budget per se, the approach that the project is taking fits in very well with the framework that the Clean Water Council has recommended, and that the Pollution Control Agency is moving into of doing our impaired waters work and protection, all of our watershed work in general, on a watershed basis. This bill follows right in with that, addressing both impaired and unimpaired waters in the Buffalo River watershed, taking care of both the protection and restoration planning needs, which would include developing the PMDLs for impaired waters in the watershed. This is a pilot approach that would help to move us into the watershed framework that we are beginning to implement at this point. So that's what I have to say. I'd be happy to take questions.
No, a few questions from other members, but I had thought you were doing watershed work now, going into watershed for your CMDL. I mean, that was what I understood from earlier testimony, and that folks were thinking that that was the best way to go already. Are you already doing this, and then why would a pilot? And that's not one I'm not understanding how this fits into something you're already doing.
Yes, Madam Chair, that is correct. We are already beginning to implement this, the very beginning of the implementation. We've begun some work with the Buffalo River Watershed District already as one of our first pilots, as well as the Cannon River Watershed is another pilot that's developing. But both these efforts are really at the start. So this would secure the funding to continue the pilot going on in the Buffalo River watershed.
Well, if we were to continue what we started as a pattern in this committee to do 10% of the PMDLs each year, would this not fall into that funding since you've already started?
Yes, Madam Chair. This type of watershed project would fit into the system that's set up for developing the PMDLs on a watershed basis.
So it would, though, as long as we are appropriating, if this committee chose to continue the PMDLs at the 10% a year level, which we started 2 years ago, if we continue that, then this project would essentially be covered. Am I getting that correct?
Yes, Madam Chair, depending on exactly the dollar values that would be appropriated. This project is a high priority project, as it is one that is underway and that we have great interest in continuing to pursue. So the likelihood of it being funded through the system that's in place is very high.
So perhaps we all want to look at the 10% a year continuing if we want to make sure that things like this happen. That's the point I was trying to get at. Okay. Questions from other members here? I see any questions. We will lay this over for possible consideration in the Clean Water Fund recommendations. And Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Good morning.
Welcome to the committee. I will move by House File 1502, be laid over for possible consideration in the Parks and Trail Fund recommendation.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. I appreciate the opportunity to have this bill heard. This is about the most important bill I have this year. The reason for that is 108 years ago, the Rock Island Swing Bridge was constructed to connect Inver Grove Heights and St. Paul Park, the Newport area, across the river, with a bridge that is the only one left standing in the United States. It carried train traffic as well as vehicle traffic and pedestrians, and it is now, literally as we speak this morning, being disassembled brick by brick, girder by girder. With that background, we had an open house just to see if anybody had any interest. It was kind of on a whim. There was only like 3 or 4 days' notice to see if anybody had an interest in preserving that bridge as a future trail or uses as a trail in connection with the river regional trail. We had over 1,000 people show up with almost no notice. The National Park Service has deemed it a treasure. They are supportive of trying to keep it as a trail, but under the current situation that it's in, it's regarded as a bridge by MnDOT and by the various transportation people in the world, and I respect that. And they don't see that it has any further use as a bridge because it doesn't work as a bridge anymore. But it would be an absolutely wonderful trail and a great overlook, one of the most unique overlooks along the river. It gets you right out into the middle of the river, not in the navigable channel, but right to the point where you can see all up and down the river. It is absolutely spectacular, and that's a point of view shared by many, many people from the National Park Service, the cities. We've been working with the county as well, and thus the request for some funding out of the Parks and Trails Fund. We've got preliminary estimates on what it would cost to reuse and recycle the bridge, and we think that the amount here that's been requested, which is $750,000, would represent somewhere in the neighborhood of about a fourth of the amount of work to fill, and that we can, that one's not mine, believe it or not, but we can, with hand in hand, find other partners to try to preserve, reduce, or reuse and recycle that bridge as a pedestrian outlook and part of the Mississippi River Regional Trail. With me today is Derek Carlson, the Park and Rec Director for the City of Inver Grove Heights. We're prepared to answer any questions or concerns you may have.
Representative Hanson, I do have questions too, but you go first.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Atkins, maybe if you can describe where this is at, because wasn't there some in Heritage Park kind of some flood area down along the river there too? And have we looked at some other protections that this could complement?
We have, and thank you for the, should I hit that with the bat, the thoughtful that you bring, Representative Hanson. That's a good point, one I should have mentioned. This is an area that is within a flood mitigation area in Heritage Village Park that we've been seeking, and the city has already expended considerable time and money together in partnership with the state to develop that. That's a project I described to you a few days ago. It's an area used to be full of a lot of homes and businesses that got flooded with a 100-year flood every 12 years. And there'd be literally hundreds of thousands and sometimes millions of dollars in damage that was shared by the state and the city and the feds. And we've been very successful with the help of folks like you in getting flood mitigation funding to remove on a voluntary basis some of the homes and businesses so that when the flood does come, and hopefully it won't be coming anytime soon, but when it comes again, that there won't be the kind of considerable damage, millions of dollars in damage that we've encountered before. This is right part and parcel of that, and the part and parcel of the Mississippi River Regional Trail as well.
I have a different pitch this time. I see the county is here, and I'd like to hear the county's perspective on the project.
And while that's coming up, there were legal issues here, I think, if MnDOT still considers this a bridge. Help us out, too.
I'd love to, Madam Chair, and I'm glad you raised it. I think we're starting to find our way through those legal issues. They were much more of a problem last year than they are now. We've deciphered the situation. What's happened, the bridge went tax forfeit. The Department of Revenue is kind of responsible for seeing what happens with that, who's going to become the eventual owner. The county has taken on the custodial role and let the contracts with Washington County on the other side for the demolition to begin. But the county has been willing to give us something of a reprieve from the death sentence for the bridge if we can find funding for it and a partnership by June. If that's not found, it goes down. And we're not looking at preserving the entire thing. The Washington County side that's crumbling is coming down. The piece that's in the navigable channel is coming out. And then the piece on the Inver Grove Heights side is the portion that would be talked of in terms of being reused and recycled as a pedestrian piece. And the city has given an indication, if there's a sense that there's a partnership available, that they might step up and take on that role. So we've gone from a year ago when you had that very critical question, I gave you a really poor answer, and now I have a really good one.
Following up with that, this would be part of the Metropolitan Council region. Is this part and parcel of the Met Council recommendation?
And thank you, Madam Chair. We have, part of it is with respect to Heritage Village Park, it's too small in its size to fit within the Met Council. I think you have to be 100 acres or more to even get on their list. And the demolition is too recent in its development to formally go through the process to make it. The Met Council is on board 100%, so is Dakota County and the city, with Mississippi River Regional Trail. This would allow for a tiny little spur off of that trail to give bikers and hikers and those that want to go out and have, according to the National Park Service, one of the most spectacular overlooks along the Mississippi River.
So I understand the Heritage Park is too small, but this would be part of a trail system. So in the package that Met Council is bringing forth to us, it is or isn't included. I'm not getting that.
I apologize. I just misunderstood. It is definitely not yet part of their package, because it literally has just been... It just started being demolished about, 6 weeks ago, or 8 weeks ago. And that's the imperative nature. I fully expect that we'll work with the Metropolitan Council, and I'd be shocked to see them not like this idea as part of their regional trail. But we have not gotten their formal as a piece of their package.
I think that's an important piece of the puzzle here.
Mr. Kelly, Madam Chair, Mr. Kelly, could you give the county's perspective?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Barry Kelly. I represent the Dakota County Board of Commissioners, and the counties are custodians of sorts, overseers of tax forfeited property on behalf of the state. This bridge went bankrupt some years back after it was ordered shut down by MnDOT because of safety concerns. The owners abandoned the property, and it has become tax forfeit. The county has been in many discussions with the city of Inver Grove Heights, which sees a great resource here, and the county agrees. Things came to a real big head early this year, when the Washington County section collapsed one day, just fell down. The Corps of Engineers had been pestering both Washington and Dakota County because the bridge is on the river, and the river is the border between the two counties, to remove the obstruction of the navigation channel, which is on the Washington County side. After that collapse, we got the Corps of Engineers issued a order to remove the bridge. That order went to MnDOT passed it to us.
The removal is being overseen by Washington County. They're accessing emergency funds of the county state aid highway formula to pay for the actual removal. Invergrove Heights has been quite interested in saving a portion, and that is Representative Atkins has said, and we are doing our best to work with the city and others to find a funding source. So far, the county doesn't have the resources. This is not in part of the county system. And yes, it's a regional trail that goes nearby, and it would be a great compliment to that trail. But so far, we've not seen any sources of funds to do what's necessary here, and it could be a lot of money. As part of the contract with the firm that's removing it, overseen by Washington County, they're removing all the other parts and will keep the pieces until June, I believe, hoping that we can come up with a management agreement. We have not been able to find anyone to take custody of the bridge, the county acting as an agent of the state. So that's where it's in limbo right now. This proposal by Representative Atkins would play a major role in moving in the direction of preserving that for an asset of the adjacent to the regional trail.
There is some trails money with the federal stimulus package that is part of the highway program, not part of anything that we do. Have you all looked at that?
Madam Chair, I have not. I'm not aware if the county's looked into it. And Madam Chair, I do not know, but I will find out.
Other questions from members?
Not so much a question, but this strikes me as another place where, again, combining with some of the green jobs money that's coming for some of the youth in terms of this kind of outdoor work might be something that would be another leveraging resource that you could use, and that would help.
Thank you.
Bring that forward.
Any other questions from members? Your timing is excellent.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll lay over House File 1503 for possible consideration of parks and fund recommendations. Representative Purcell.
Yes. Madam Chair, I've moved to March 24th.
I see no questions. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? Minutes are approved. Any questions for members? There's no other business. Meeting's adjourned.